ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So this time next week, we'll know the recipient of this year's Nobel Peace Prize. It's being announced in Oslo on Friday. In the past, the award has gone to Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and the journalist Maria Ressa, who we spoke to on the programme in August. Three sitting or former US presidents are also Nobel laureates, Woodrow Wilson, Jimmy Carter, and Barack Obama. And the present incumbent, Donald Trump, would like to add his name to that list. Well, we've been assessing those claims from Donald Trump, somebody who's definitely tried to be more of a peacemaker than a warmonger.
Do you deserve the Nobel Prize, do you think?
Everyone thinks so, but I would never say it.
Everyone says that I should get the Nobel Peace Prize for each one of these achievements.
In a gilded White House, it's the golden bauble he covets most. The Nobel Peace Prize has long been the target of his presidential and personal ambition.
If I were named Obama, I would have had the Nobel Prize given in 10 seconds. He got the Nobel Prize, he didn't even know what the hell he got it for.
But much like a film studio mounting a campaign ahead of the Oscars to get one of those golden statuettes, Donald Trump has been making his case. This was his speech to the UN General Assembly in New York.
I ended seven wars, and in all cases, they were raging with countless thousands of people being killed.
So what are the seven conflicts, and how legitimate are his claims to ending them?
Armenia and Azerbaijan.
There's been an almost four-decade fight between Armenia and Azerbaijan over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh. And the president brought the leaders together at the White House, where they finalized a peace agreement announced 5 months earlier.
It's a long time, 35 years. They fought, and now they're friends. And they're going to be friends for a long time.
That was definitely a positive move. But the agreement has yet to be ratified, and some key issues, such as proposed changes to the Armenian constitution, still remain unresolved.
We settled Azerbaijan and Albania.
At one point, President Trump also confused Armenia with Albania, suggesting he's not completely across the detail.
Cambodia and Thailand.
Earlier this year, violence erupted along the border between Thailand and Cambodia. Donald Trump threatened both countries' leaders with ending trade negotiations unless they agreed to a ceasefire.
2,000 people were dead on the border, but it was just starting, and I was talking to one of the two nations on trade, and I said, I'm not going to sign a trade deal if you guys are going to fight, and I got the other one, and again, great leadership.
And they did agree to end the violence.
Thailand and Cambodia, the two neighbours, have agreed an unconditional ceasefire to end days of fighting along their border.
Cambodia's Prime Minister has nominated President Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, but the border conflict has not been resolved.
The Congo and Rwanda, a vicious, violent war that was.
Back in June, the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Rwanda signed a peace agreement brokered by the United States.
After 30 years, you're all set.
We are.
I think both of you have said that's enough, right?
That's enough. Thank you very much, Mr. President. This is indeed a historic day.
But this is one of the most complex conflicts in the world, and fighting is still continuing between the militia groups who've been at war for 30 years.
Kosovo and Serbia.
Here, Donald Trump claims to have averted a war through the threat of U.S. tariffs.
But they were going to have a big-time war, and we stopped it. We stopped it because of trade. They want to trade with the United States. I said, we don't trade with people that go to war.
But although tensions have eased, there hasn't been an agreement.
Egypt and Ethiopia.
Egypt and Ethiopia are at odds over a dam on the River Nile. But they're not at war, and there's been no agreement. So it's unclear precisely how Donald Trump thinks he's settled this dispute.
Just last week, Egypt was saying that it plans to take action if Ethiopia blocks its water supply. So no deal here either.
Pakistan and India.
When these nuclear neighbors clashed over a terror attack in Indian-controlled Kashmir, the United States certainly played a diplomatic role, urging a truce.
They were going at it big, and they were great, two great leaders that came together just prior to what would have been a tremendous conflict, as you know, a nuclear conflict probably.
But although Pakistan nominated Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, India claimed the U.S. role was only marginal.
Israel and Iran.
Donald Trump announced a ceasefire between Israel and Iran in June, after the United States had bombed Iran's nuclear sites and Tehran retaliated by carrying out strikes on a U.S. base in Qatar.
There will be a complete and total ceasefire in approximately 6 hours from now when Israel and Iran...
But there hasn't been a peace deal nor any agreement on Iran's future nuclear program.
If this works out, we'll have eight in 8 months. That's pretty good. Nobody's ever done that.
Two of the world's bloodiest conflicts are still ongoing. In Gaza this week, he announced that 20-point peace plan. The war is still raging in Ukraine. Despite Donald Trump's repeated boast, he could strike a deal between Kyiv and Moscow in 24 hours.
I thought this maybe would be the easiest one, and it's not the easiest one. It's a tough one.
And another potential problem in his pursuit of the Nobel Prize, his decision to rename the U.S. Department of Defense the U.S. Department of War. He knows he's a long shot bet.
Will you get the Nobel Prize? Absolutely not. They'll give it to some guy that didn't do a damn thing. They'll give it to a guy that wrote a book about the mind of Donald Trump and what it took to solve the war. So he'll get the Nobel Prize will go to a writer.
Well, earlier I spoke to Professor Kristin Sandvik from the Peace Research Institute in Oslo. And I began by asking her to explain the process and who actually gets to decide the winner.
Well, I mean, this is a group of five experts that have been nominated by the Norwegian parliament. They're not active politicians, and they sit together and huddle for months and months over all the nominations they get in by the January deadline. Then, you know, they make a short list and they start getting expert assessments of who's eligible, who has really, you know, hidden secrets. And then, you know, it's also about what happens in the world, right? So as we speak, you know, they might not even have had their last meeting yet. You know, this might actually be, decided Thursday night. Who knows?
And there's a lot of secrecy around the process, presumably.
There is a lot of secrecy around the process. And there's also no press leakages, so we won't actually know until Friday, until that door opens at the Nobel Center.
You said something very important there, and I think it's a point that may have been lost on the Trump White House. Nominations close at the end of January. Donald Trump became the president on January the 20th, 2025. So presumably, a lot of these world leaders like Benjamin Netanyahu, who's saying Trump should get the Nobel Peace Prize, and other heads of government, they've missed the deadline.
Well, you know, we don't really know, right? So this year, actually 224 individuals had been nominated by that deadline. But who those are, you know, we won't really know until 2075, and that's a long time to wait, which means you're not also going to be caught out lying. So what happens is that technically, you know, once you want to nominate someone, there's a website, there's a procedure for this. But that website doesn't actually open until mid-October. So whatever you say you've done between, you know, in February and until mid-October, you actually haven't done it.
So there's a suspicion that a lot of these world leaders are trying to sort of butter up Donald Trump by saying, we've nominated you, but they haven't really nominated him.
Or they nominated him in January. We won't know.
But then he would have only been president, what, 10 or 11 days? So not much peacemaking in that time.
Well, but, you know, he has actually been nominated before, even by, you know, Australian academics for being a non-war president. And I think, you know, as we're having this conversation, as we're seeing as who is the top of the bookmakers' lists, he is really a non-war president, and he was a non-war president in his first period as well.
And that's an important point to make, isn't it? A lot of people sort of caricature Donald Trump as a warmonger. And actually, he has tried to be more of a peacemaker. I wonder if anyone in history has ever campaigned so openly and so brazenly to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Probably not as openly and as brazenly, but you know, with social media and with the kind of media landscape we have today, everything is just more visible. But what I can say is that it's fairly common for candidates to have strong backers with some, you know, financial power to, you know, hire PR companies, for example. You know, I work at the Peace Research Institute. You know, some of us are, you know, being targeted by lobbyists, for example, trying to sort of speak up their candidate. So, you know, it's a little bit of a political game. At the same time, you know, this committee is fiercely independent. So we don't really know what's going to come up on Friday.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize that lobbying campaigns were quite so systematic.
They're quite systematic. And, you know, they're just so, you know, I work at an institute where they have an annual list. And that list is sort of made, and this I can reveal to you. That's an experts list where, you know, we have town hall meetings, there, you know, public input. It's a real process of getting that director's list of possible nominees. And it's getting a lot of coverage. And, you know, people want to be on that list too, right? It's just being sort of seen as someone important enough to be considered for the prize.
You look at the awards and who has received them in the past, and there are people who are totally uncontroversial. Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa. Others are controversial. Many thought, for instance, that Barack Obama simply did not deserve the prize in the first year of his presidency. I think Barack Obama himself was a little bit surprised as well. I wonder when Donald Trump says, you know, Obama got it so easily, he's got a point.
He's got a real point. I mean, you know, when we think about sort of arguments against Donald Trump getting the prize, is that there's been not a great experience with awarding the prize to sitting heads of state. So Obama is of course, I wouldn't say a source of national embarrassment for Norwegians, but we're still unhappy about it. And then, you know, we gave it to Abiy Ali in 2019 in Ethiopia, and then there was a two-year war in Tigray. So giving it to someone who's still, you know, acting, who still has the power to engage in conflict, hasn't been seen as very successful. So, you know, just, and this is also for Trump, you know, see what he can achieve, see what sticks, see what kind of peace is left a couple of years from now. I think that's mainly the sentiment. So he's not dismissed. I mean, he's made a very serious effort to talk about peace. And to engage. But, you know, you have to do more than trying.
Yeah, you actually have to get concrete achievements. There are names on the list like Henry Kissinger, the former U.S. Secretary of State. He got the prize in the early 1970s. It prompted that famous Tom Lehrer line, "Satire died the day that Kissinger got the Nobel Peace Prize." I mean, there are some names on that list that, you know, are somewhat surprising.
There are surprising names on that list. And you know, his Vietnamese counterpart refused the prize, saying that there wasn't any peace in Vietnam back in 1973. And, you know, there are names on that, there are non-names on that list as well, right? So there are several examples of the committee not handing out a prize because they couldn't find anyone worthy. So, you know, back in 1948, Gandhi had just been assassinated, so they didn't give out a prize. But it has a controversial history.
Yeah, I remember Bill Clinton in his final months as president, just desperate to get a Nobel Peace Prize. He was negotiating with the Israeli Prime Minister then, Ehud Barak, and Yasser Arafat, the Palestinian leader, and he really had his eyes on that Nobel Prize, and he just couldn't get them over the line. So, you know, it is a prize which has been coveted by many U.S. presidents, and only three of them have got it: Woodrow Wilson, Jimmy Carter, and Barack Obama. Who is Donald Trump up against this year? Who do we expect to get the Nobel Peace Prize?
You know, I think the bookies have a lot of sort of non, you know, Zelensky certainly isn't a real candidate, I would think. But we have, you know, the Sudan's emergency response rooms. You know, there's a horrific civil war going on. And this is really a distributed grassroots humanitarian initiative. You know, when you look at who wins the prize, fairly regularly, they have also won other prizes. So Sudan Emergency Response Rooms have also just recently won a really prestigious Norwegian human rights prize, the RAFTA Prize. And then, you know, you have the International Criminal Court, actually, the National Court of Justice. And then you have you guys, actually, the Committee to Protect Journalists. It's a U.S.-based watchdog compiling data on journalists. So, I mean, I think this is really open field and, you know, or it might be someone we just haven't heard about or hadn't considered. Countries can't really get the prize. But if you look at Qatar over a number of years, you know, making very serious efforts at peace mediation, for example, I mean, they would certainly also be a contender.
And I think that's an important point to make, isn't it? We often think about the Nobel Prize being awarded to a person, but often they are awarded to organizations.
So living persons, right? And then active organizations or institutions. So no countries, but certainly individuals in, for example, the Department of Foreign Affairs or something else.
All the Nobel Prizes will be announced next week. I wonder what the mood is like in Oslo. Is it feverish, or does the outside world make more fuss about the Nobel Prize than the people of Norway?
Well, I mean, we do care about this, right? I mean, I'm a peace researcher, right? So it's a big day for us. We're sitting together and watching this on monitor. But when the Peace Prize is awarded, there is a torchlight procession. There is a Save the Children Peace Fest for students. Kindergartens across Norway talk about the Peace Prize. So it's really sort of embedded in how we teach and train young people, for example. This is an important national symbol for us. We want to get this right.
Professor Kristin Sandvik. It has been a great pleasure talking to you on Saturday Extra. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.